That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
We'd like to welcome everybody back to the Football Family Podcast. I've got a guest on that we had intention to talk about his new book, and we'll have him back on soon, Lord willing. But today we're going to talk a little bit more about the football team that he follows and the reasons why he follows it. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Steve Massey.
We've had Steve on before, and we're going to have him on again if he's able to talk about his books. But he's a Steelers fan, and we don't hold that against him on the Football's Family Podcast. We don't do that. The only thing we'd hold against somebody is the Baltimore Ravens, and I think you would agree with that.
Yeah, the team. Yeah, some of the fans are good people.
We just lump them all together. That's all we.
Okay. Sounds good.
No, I have over in the corner here, Steve, an Edgar Allan Poe bobblehead, and it's Halloween time. It's Halloween time. There he is right there. And I just tell people, you like what you like. I just hate the fact that one of my favorite players is no longer with the Titans and he's over there, but that's not the point. Steve, we talked about the last time you came on, and if you want to kind of give everybody a little bit of a background of yourself, what made you a Steelers fan to the point that you write books about them?
Well, I was a bandwagon jumper when I was a child, like a lot of people were. There's a lot of Packers fans that are older than me, a lot of Niners fans that are younger than me. The Steelers came along in 72 when I was 6 years old. They had their first really, really good season. And they made the playoffs and the Immaculate Reception happened and all that. And I was like, gee, these guys are my favorite team. And, you know, I hung on with them until I got to be 14 when they won their last of the 70s Super Bowl. And I just stayed with them. And it's just something I really enjoy. It's a connection to, I guess, a different time in my life and when I was younger. And now it's just continued because it's a great team, great franchise. And I love keeping up with them to this very day.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little tiny town called Crystal Springs, Mississippi.
And
it's about 30 minutes from the state capital in Jackson. It's probably about 15 minutes now because Jackson is spreading.
Yeah, it is. Last time I was in Jackson, I got lost a couple times. It's a pretty big city.
Yeah.
So you were in... You're talking about the 70s. Mm-hmm. You had the Colts fans. You had the Packers.
That's right.
You had the Cowboys that were building momentum.
Yep.
You had the Steelers, and you had the Dolphins.
Yeah, and the Oilers, too.
Oh, the Oilers, yeah.
Yeah.
Lovey Blue almost. Lovey Blue was in the 80s, but it was getting to that part.
Yeah. Well, now they played in the AFC Championship in at the end of the 78-79 seasons were both with the Oilers, Steelers-Oilers. And, you know, I was able to interview Dan Pastorini, who was the Oilers quarterback for many years. What a thrill. What a really nice guy, too. And he told me he thought that those were the two true Super Bowls.
One of those plays was a missed call, if I remember correctly. Should have been touchdown for the Oilers. Yeah.
I told Dan when I talked to him, when I first contacted him, you know, I told him about myself, what I was writing. And at the end of the letter, kind of whimsically, I put, you know, Renfro caught the ball. So that seemed to have gotten an interview for me.
He did catch the ball.
He caught it. Yeah.
You know what's funny about that, way off the subject? There are certain things that snowball, and it takes a while. You're talking about 78, 79. That play right there, along with some of the problems in the 80s, plus the playoffs where the Oilers gave up so many points against the comeback by the Bills. The reason why we have the Titans here in Nashville now is because of all that just cascading.
Yeah, because Bud Adams was so angry with the way that the how things were shaking out, and he was frustrated. And they traded Dan in 1980 for Ken Stabler, and then they fired Bum Phillips, which was appalling. But that that definitely was a catalyst for them moving to Memphis and then Nashville the next year. I think they moved to Memphis in 97, I think.
I tell you, even in Nashville, no, way off the subject what we were going to talk about. Even in Nashville, we didn't want them to move to Memphis. I say
Is that
we,
right?
I'm not Nashville, but I'm close to it.
Yeah.
We didn't want them to move to Memphis because it's like, what's the point? You're a Nashville team, and Memphis
Well,
didn't want to keep them for a year.
I hope that you will not hate me, but I have a confession to make. I went to the Liberty Bowl and saw the Steelers play the Oilers. And that, it was in Memphis, and it was in 97. And when the Oilers took the field, we Steelers fans probably outnumbered Oilers fans. I think they were still the Oilers. I don't think they were Titans yet.
No, they became the Titans later on. It was the Tennessee Oilers for a couple of years.
Yeah, well, the whole Liberty Bowl just was saturated with booing when the Oilers came out. And
No,
Bud
well,
Adams.
here's the thing. I wanted to go to a game, and I could have got tickets for maybe $20, maybe. And the problem is, where I lived at the time, I was an hour and a half from Memphis, and you cannot get to Memphis from anywhere in Tennessee easy.
How about that? Yeah.
But once, no, my wife and my father-in-law went to a Steelers Tennessee Titans game a few years ago,
Yeah.
and even though it's a home game, they were more black and gold
Yeah.
there than they were blue.
Yeah. Well, which was what I was about to say, was when the Oilers took the field, they were booed. And the next day, Bud Adams says, "We're moving to Nashville a year early." That's fact. That's why they were only in Memphis was 1 year, was because the attendance was bad, and that last game shoved it over the edge. The Oilers won the game. It was the first Steelers game I was ever able to attend in person. And I just, my eyes popped up when I walked in there because it was like a home game, So sorry, I did boo your team.
Well, it's okay. I'll forgive you this time, but you're probably going to do it again too. That's the thing. I'd say if
Well, the guy I dedicated the book to is my best friend, and he's a huge Titans fan. So we grew up together. He's just a Titans maniac, and he's sticking with them. It's hard times lately, but
Well, here's
he's
the
toughing
thing.
it
You
out.
have to be kind of a maniac to stick with a team like this right now. You have a history. Your team has a history of, I'd say, since 70, of being one of the most stable, maybe even before, but what I can remember, 70 being one of the more stable organizations in the NFL.
Yeah,
Chuck
I
Noll
agree. Yeah.
starting it, and with drafts and and even in your book that we're going to talk about next time, Revolution.
Yes, that's correct.
The revolution that I understood from it, of course, I hadn't had to read the whole thing, I hadn't had a chance to read the whole thing yet, but I skimmed over it. Your did the well, see, I'm having a lot of trouble thinking right now. I apologize. Your scouting departments going after primarily historically black colleges, and that to me was revolution enough, where you have your Lynn Swann that you knew was going to be something, but then you found other players in smaller schools that no one else would think about.
Well, that's interesting, because in the book, I actually downplay a little bit of Bill Nunn's role because so many football historians are familiar with him. I definitely talk about him going out and getting Glenn Edwards and Steve Davis and all but one of the Steel Curtain defensive linemen. But there's a mesh to it as far as any prospect that they brought in, and it was the way that they were coached and developed. Andy Russell took one look at L.C. Greenwood when he came along in 1969 and said, this guy's a scarecrow. There's no way he's going to make this team. Well, Bill Nunn and Art Rooney Jr. found L.C. And when he was brought in, his defensive line coach, Walt Hackett, turned him into a good backup player. And after Radakovich had the defensive line for 1 year, and then George Perlis took it over, then L.C. was completely developed, and he became one of the greatest pass rushers. The true part of my book, the most important part, is actually Blesto, the scouting combine. And with Blesto, what I have in the book is I have tiny biographies of all of the scouts that were there. But Blesto was the first combine, and the Steelers came up with that. And that was actually one of the few things that was before Chuck Knoll when they came up with Blesto. Now, in terms of head coaching, there's absolutely no question that it's very stable. And, you know, I think right now the rumbling with the current Steelers is with Coach Tomlin. And, you know, the fact that he's struggled so much with these first-round playoff games. And it's really becoming a problem for the fan base. And, frankly, it's becoming a problem for me. And I don't like to badmouth anybody in football or anything else because they're not around to defend themselves. But we've got to get past this idea that making the playoffs is this all end. We got to go deeper into the playoffs, particularly this year with the defensive talent that we have, and you know, highly paid defense. And you know, they should have been better prepared with the running game. From last year, from Najee Harris, they had to let Najee go. Salary cap and all that stuff, I understand. But the problem was now we don't have a really reliable back, and it's hurting the team. It's only been 2 weeks. We're only 2 weeks into the season, but things are rough, and the defense is rougher. So I guess that's rambling. I hope I didn't.
No, that's okay. Much. That's what this is about. I'm just here. I want you to talk, Steve, because I like hearing perspectives, because I'm not familiar with it. I have a limited view on things here. I'm already watching a fire burning in at Nissan Stadium, and it's not going to let up until probably 2 or 3 years from now. So I'm just looking at other people and seeing how they're enjoying life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was a diehard anti-Rodgers. Diehard. I did not want him to come to the team. Opening day, the guy goes out and throws 4 touchdowns, and he is in command of that field. And by the 4th touchdown, I was like, oh, yeah, I knew it all along.
No,
I knew he was going to be I knew he was going to be great. So, but he's really something else. He didn't have a great week last week. But the problems with the team right now are legion. And you know, things have got to be addressed. You can plod along right at 500 and make it to midseason and still win the Super Bowl. It's been done before. But, you know, these problems aren't going to go away. And, you know, people's patience is wearing thin with the Steelers right now, fans' patience.
Let me ask you this then. Not way off the subject, but you brought it up. Aaron Rodgers, first ballot Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Russell Wilson, yes. First ballot Hall of Famer?
I don't know. Okay. You know, I can't.
If he retired or quit when he was a Seahawk, he was a first ballot Hall of Famer with the Seahawks. I believe that.
Yeah, I do too.
But then he left. Would he have been better just stopping?
I don't know. See, because, you know, he went to Denver and he was great statistically. And you know, then when he came to the Steelers, I thought the guy still had some arm, and I thought he was a very good leader. So now he's in, is it New York?
Yeah, he's a
Yeah,
Giant.
he went crazy in that Dallas game. I saw that game. That looked like the old Russell Wilson. So I don't know. It's a good question. He easily would be a case for Hall of Fame. First ballot, I don't know. I mean, I
Well,
honestly don't.
because here's the thing, Aaron Rodgers, to me, I know he didn't want to stop playing.
Yeah.
But then you have people like a Brett Favre who played too long.
Yes,
Probably
he
Johnny
did.
Unitas played too long.
Johnny played far too long.
Joe Namath played far too long. You don't want to see Joe Namath as a Ram. I'm sorry, it's just not the
Sure.
way things are.
Right.
John Elway played too long, but he won two Super Bowls, so you can overlook that.
Yeah.
Steve Young, not Steve Young. Well, Steve Young maybe, but Joe Montana played too long, but I think he did all right at
When it
the
was
end of
with the
his.
Chiefs.
Yeah, I think he did okay.
Yeah.
You have some people who actually can do that, and then you have somebody like, Peyton Manning went too long, but he won a Super Bowl and he was fine.
Yeah.
It just. You run that risk. Do you lose a chance to be a first ballot Hall of Famer the longer you play, even though you feel like you've got it in you?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I don't pay it's part of this is all intangible. Part of it's subjective. Why does Joe Namath deserve to be in the Hall of Fame when his numbers aren't as good as many other quarterbacks that aren't in? He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because of Super Bowl III and because of what he brought to the game. He helped to get the legitimacy of the AFL to where there was a merger. I mean, he did it. The guy did it, and it was no small feat, and it was not just one game. He was a marquee name. He brought in people to watch AFL games. Statistically or not, still a great leader, and he still helps get the Jets over. So much of it's just subjective. That's all I can say.
Well, and the reason I say that is Joe Montana, or excuse me, like try this again. Joe Namath,
Yeah.
statistically, don't look at his statistics. I'm with you. Look at his everything.
Yeah.
If you want statistics, I was looking at, Sunday. I tell people this, especially now that I'm kind of really, really sick feeling and sleeping a lot more. I have a good way on Sundays to know when to nap. You sleep after the first quarter of the Titans game, wake up the third or at the end of the third, and then go back to sleep through the fourth, and you have seen the only part of the games that you need to see. But
Yeah.
when they were showing Matt Stafford's numbers,
Yeah.
that guy has thrown the ball, and you don't even think about how good of a player he is.
No, you don't.
And,
You don't.
would he have been a Hall of Famer if he had only if he hadn't won that Super Bowl?
Well, I tell you, recently departed Roman Gabriel. There's another guy right there that, I think his son has been agitated for him to be put in the Hall of Fame, and I can't lie, he's got a good case for it. But Roman Gabriel never won a championship, so that's part of the reason why he's not in, I guess. I don't know. I think they have to do the past era stars. They've come up with that now, so. Like I said, he's got a case. There's a case for him to be there. If I could just, there's a cool story about Joe Green. Part of the book, a small part of it is folklore. This is a much more heavily referenced book than the first one. But Joe Green is in all these stories. And one of the stories that I came across that is not in the book was they were playing the Jets. And one of the younger players, put the wood on Joe and tackled him low. It wasn't a dirty hit, but he took him out from his legs. And the kid got back to the sidelines, and Joe called him over, and he just gently told him. He said, "We don't tackle Joe like that. We're not going to hit him down on where his legs are. We don't tackle him like that. Don't do that again." And true story. Some of these myths and stuff that are told, the team folklore of all these different teams, some of them aren't true. and I, that I did put in the book that aren't, that didn't happen. Joe Green did not spit in Dick Butkus's face. It didn't happen. But he really told that the young player that I can't remember what the guy's name was, but he had respect for Joe Namath. You know, Joe Green got drafted in 1969. When he was in his early 20s, he saw Joe Namath, and that's what Joe Namath did for football. You know, we're not going to do him like that. We're not going to hit him like that.
Well, especially because Joe Namath's knees were held together by duct tape and a prayer.
Correct. And that was what Joe Green was going for. You know, we're not going to do that to his knees. This is an opponent. You know, that's a football is a rough sport. It's very rough, and you're going to get hurt if you play it. But he just told the guy, he said, we're not going to hit him like that. You know, it'll hurt him, hurt his career, and hurt football in the bigger picture.
Right,
but
so I didn't. Go ahead.
No, I just said it didn't make the book. The book is nearly 500 pages, and I had to trim that down from about 700. I had to cut a lot of it out.
That's a lot of pages.
A lot of pages, yeah. A lot, it took me 6 years to write it.
Oh, good gracious.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm going to have to, like I said, I'm going to cut it short a little bit today because sure. I want you to come back on.
Sure.
And I've enjoyed talking with you before and the emails that we send. But one of the things I want to ask, because I might have asked you this, but I'm going to ask you now. You've got 100 years worth of history. The Rooneys have owned the Steelers for a long time.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah.
Lots of cigars have been smoked in that area, haven't it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
If you could tell me, and this is probably impossible, okay? But I'm going to ask you anyway. If you can tell me one person, one Steeler, either coach, player, executive that made the biggest difference for the Steelers to be who they are right now, who would that be?
Joe Green.
That was fast. That was fast.
Now there are other guys that were important. Franco Harris, Ernie Stotner, Bradshaw, Roethlisberger, but it's Joe Green that completely changes the franchise for good from the day he was drafted. And there are myths, there are Joe Green myths, and there are Joe Green stories, and there's, you know, there's two different kinds. Joe was the anchor of the defensive line. Joe was the prototype that Noel wanted. Joe was the leader. He inspired people. Everybody that I interviewed, without exception, Joe Green was the guy that they respected the most. I talked to Dan Pastorini. Great conversation. Oilers quarterback. Had nothing but good things to say about Joe because there was so much respect between the Oilers and the Steelers. I mean, it's easily Joe Green. And that's a great deal of that I learned from doing the research and finding this out. I grew up a Steelers fan, loved Joe, but I didn't understand how important Joe Green was until I researched that book. And, you know, God bless Jack Lambert. He was a great linebacker. But there ain't no Jack Lambert without Joe Green and those guys up front. You know, I think about it toward the end of my book. My book only goes up to 1974. It doesn't cover the whole dynasty because it's about building the team. Joe lined up at a 45-degree angle, and it popped open gaps that other teams weren't able to solve for years. And it was because of Joe. It was his idea, his size, his ability, his agility. I don't know what else to say. I could probably go on for another 20 minutes about how great the man was and how important he was to the franchise.
You think he was the best draft pick that they've ever made? Most formative.
It's a tough one, but there's easily a strong case to be made for it because the Roethlisberger pick was just enormous because that again that changed the dynamics for the Steelers there. And they won two Super Bowls with Ben, and they should have won another one. You know, he was fantastic too, and that revived the franchise. It really did.
So right now, and we're going to finish with this, if that's okay.
Sure.
Right now, Super Bowl picks for this year for you right now. Week 2, the Browns and the Titans have already been eliminated.
Well, I think the Bills are going from the AFC.
I think so too. I
It
just
could
found
be.
out that the NFL just shot in here and said Justin Fields is out.
That's
Tyrod
a
Taylor will
shame.
start this week.
That's a shame.
I like Justin Fields. I like the Jets. I
Too.
think the Jets are just they're historical. Justin Fields, Tyrod Taylor is a good player too. But I hate seeing concussions for anybody, period.
Oh, I do too. It's terrible. Let me flip the script and let me ask you a question. What is different about the Eagles? It's a trick question, kind of.
In what way?
Well, that's what I'm asking you. How have they changed? It's a trick question.
I don't know if they have.
Bingo.
I don't
Okay.
know if they
So
have.
if and I agree with you 100%. So if nothing's changed, then what's going to stop them from going back to the Super Bowl?
Oh, I agree with you. I
Yeah,
believe they win it
that's where
again.
I was going. I was going for the trick question there. That's the question that I ask when I see the Eagles plays. Well, what's different? And by the way, that's a good team. That's a really good team. They upset the
You know
Patriots in the Super Bowl. I
what was
mean,
funny about Sunday, and you heard this, I know you did. Was it Chris Jones telling what was it, Jalen Hurts that you didn't have over 100 yards?
yeah, I
I'm
saw
like,
that.
dude, it doesn't
Yeah.
matter. They beat you.
I know. Yeah, it's the difference between fantasy football and reality football, which I prefer the latter, because what counts is who won the game. Games are changed really quick. Renfro caught the ball when the Oilers and the Steelers played.
They did. He
Okay.
did.
Okay. There's no question about that. After that happened, after that would have had that happen, it changes everything. All the play calling, what they do, etc. And after that game, when Pastorini was sitting at his locker, he was totally exhausted on NFL films, and he just looked into the distance and he said, "I'm happy for them. They would have just figured out a way to win the game anyway." And I mean, you don't see that kind of grace from a person that's just lost one of the most important games of their life. You don't see that anymore.
No.
But everything, the trajectory of everything changes with the play calling. And so, you might have the best wide receiver in the world, but you're going to kind of like lay off of him if you've got enough of a lead. So to me, that's the difference between real football and fantasy football.
I'll give you one last thing here.
Yeah.
My daughter, and I see I agree with you right now as the Eagles and the Bills. I called this a while back, but it's true because it's not that hard to see. When you win Super Bowls, you start to run into, do I keep the players I got or do I get new ones? And that's where the Chiefs are right now.
Yeah.
So
Well,
the Eagles will be there soon.
yeah. With the Chiefs, that moment in the NFL is fleeting, and they almost did the three-peat. They got all the way, but they couldn't pull it off. Then you have to start making decisions,
So Harmony, my daughter, is I'm trying to raise her a Titans fan, but I don't want to do that to a person. Okay, I just don't want to do that to a person.
Yeah.
So she's like, "Dad, I want you to start buying me bird stuff." I'm like, "Bird stuff? Man, we got birds all over the place, Tennessee. You just need to look outside." No, like that team was in the Super Bowl, the birds. I'm like, "The Eagles? Yeah." So I started buying her. I gave her got her Jalen Hurts t-shirt. And a Saquon Barkley t-shirt.
Yeah,
And
good
she's
ball
like,
player.
Dad, I want more stuff from them. So you need to give me your car and I can make it all Eagles up. I'm like, you know what? That might be a little too far for me. But she is
So
so into that, apparently.
what you're saying is that she's ruffled your
Oh,
feathers.
don't you dare. Don't you dare. Don't. No.
I'm a dad. I'm a grandpa. So I do grandpa jokes.
Yeah, I saw that coming. I was like, "Dadgummit!" I don't into that. She did ruffle my feathers, and it was a Titanic letdown. And that's
Yeah.
all that was.
Oh.
See, I had to get it
Ah,
back.
very good. Touche. Well
Yeah.
played. Yeah.
Let's get you back on, Mr. Steve, when I have a little chance to read more on this, because I want to get at this book a little bit more than what I have. I do
Absolutely.
appreciate you spending some time with me today.
Glad to. Thanks for letting me ramble on and on.
Where can we get your new books that we're going to talk about?
Go Amazon.com. I think it's, I guess, $24.99. I've been really proud of myself for holding my costs down for all these years since I discovered this little hobby of mine. But things are getting tough as far as making money off books, so I did have to go a little bit higher on the price this year. You can get it on Kindle as well for $9.99, and I hope you guys like it. It's a labor of love.
Well, thank you. And we'll put a link in the notes, and when you come back on, we'll do that again.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Thank y'all for listening to the Football's Family Podcast.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.